Chapter 4, Choosing Reality Over Fantasy.
Is it okay if I like grab the tissue?
Yeah, sure.
A bit closer in case I, like, yeah.
Crying is allowed. I've been giving dating and relationship advice for over 10 years. I've corresponded and spoken with thousands of people. But in all that time, I've never met anyone with an issue quite like Diana's.
Start by just going back through the story and bring us up to what's happening now.
Can I cry now?
You have to speak first.
Diana is a young actor and aspiring screenwriter from New York. She's a lesbian, parkour-obsessed immigrant from Vietnam. This alone would typically make her story unique and interesting, but her issue was something I had never experienced, much less ever heard about.
3.5 years ago, I went to this parkour class and met this lady, girl, I don't know, woman, yeah.
A woman.
And I could sense, I would see her, like, glance over in my direction, and of course, I'll be, you know, trying to not, like, notice or whatever, and then I'll glance back at her, the typical, you know. And I felt confident enough to just be like, okay, I'm just going to ask her out for coffee, and, you know, we'll be good. And yeah. I was really excited, really pumped up. And then, as luck would have it, or like a movie story would have it, my dad got into an accident, and I was forced to go back.
Yeah.
I was there for, like, a few months. So when I came back, she had already was with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So we can name her X.
Yeah.
Just for clarification purposes. And I remember the first time I came back after a few months, I was sitting like in the lobby area just waiting for her. And I looked up, and when I looked up, she was like staring at me. She was eye to eye, like, you know, how I'm looking at you right now. And it was just open and naked, so to speak. And it was just like her and me, just like, and she said, oh, hey, you're here. Like in that voice, in that look, right? And it was just me and her. Like, I felt like I did not, little saw a chatter in the background, and that did not even like sort of exist. It was sort of in the background, but it was just me and her for like seconds, maybe less than 10 seconds, but a good 7 seconds at least.
Yeah.
And at that time, it felt like, you know, for a few minutes, it was very, very intense.
Yeah.
And it was like that moment that I sort of knew that, okay, you know, it wasn't whatever we felt before. I was still kind of there.
Yeah.
But she had already started seeing someone, I think it was like 2 or 3 months into their relationship at that time. So I couldn't like...
There was no opportunity. Right person, wrong time.
Totally.
Yeah.
At this point, you're probably thinking the same thing I did. Okay, you met this woman, you thought you had a thing, but then you had to leave the country, then you come back and she's with someone else, but there's still an attraction. Big deal, right? Well, for Diana, it did end up being a big deal. And while it will sound strange, I think her particular issue actually illustrates a challenge we all face. Diana's just a bit more intense about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cool. I was still consistent. I went back every week, and during those 2 months, I was like, okay, you know, this lady's ideal. She is pretty much everything
you want.
Maybe we haven't gone out for dates, you know, whatever, but just interacting in the class, knowing what kind of person she is, like, this is not a fantasy. Like, I kept, you know, this whole, even until now, it was like, was that a fantasy?
Yeah.
And it didn't feel like a fantasy until I met E. And even after, it was like, okay, well, I know who the ideal person is for me, and I will not settle for anything less.
Diana has fallen under the spell of one of those movie-perfect love-at-first-sight moments. She believes the other woman, X, had the same experience. She tells herself it didn't feel like a fantasy. And as we'll see, despite 3 years passing, despite being in a serious relationship with another woman who she is very happy with, Diana has struggled to let go of that feeling that she was supposed to be with X all along. She still thinks about her every day, sometimes every few minutes. She often gets lost in thought, fantasizing about her, despite the fact that she's never dated her and hasn't even really hung out with her in almost 2 years. This chapter is about fantasies and the difficulty we have in differentiating between what is true in our relationships and what exists only in our minds. We all fantasize. It's normal. Fantasies feel good. They're fun. But beyond a certain point, they can become dangerous. Because many of us use fantasies as a way to avoid reality, to avoid painful facts about ourselves and others that we don't want to accept, to avoid doing the work that we don't really want to do. We all use fantasies this way a little bit, and we have to learn how to let go of our fantasies when they no longer reflect the reality before us. Sometimes this is easy, but sometimes it's incredibly hard. Diana's issue, it appears, is that her fantasies stick to her mind much stronger than the rest of us. I've used Diana's story in this book because, well, one, because it's pretty zany and awesome, but mainly because I think her story teaches us about how we use fantasies to protect ourselves, and how those same fantasies can easily end up hurting us. Time and time again, throughout this chapter, I'll challenge Diana's fantasy that X was the perfect woman for her. And each time it will be met with intense resistance. Diana does not want to let the fantasy go. There is something inside her that clings to it. Much of our work together will be looking at what that something is. In the meantime, I want to learn more about her current long-term partner, E, and try to suss out the differences between these two women in her life. So how did you meet E?
I went to see this movie with a meetup group. And sitting beside me was this lady, I guess, whom I wished that she wasn't there because I was actually harping on somebody else who was sitting beside her because I thought she was cute and she reminded me of Ellen Page. And I was like, okay, like I want to go home with her tonight or like in a few weeks. So, but no, but E sat beside me and, you know, I was like, okay, fine. So I introduced myself. I was like, hi, E is from Greece. And she also, she had an accent, and I asked, where are you from? She told me where she was from. So we sort of, like, you know, started talking from there, and we talked after the movie ended, and we grabbed coffee after the movie ended, and I was like, okay, no, she's really awesome to talk to, very great communicator, and definitely not the one for me, doesn't want kids, you know, not into film. I mean, she likes watching TV, but she's not, yeah, in, like, the working on film side, and she likes traveling.
Yeah.
So she's, like, everything wrong for me, and the kids thing obviously was, like, I know.
Yeah.
But maybe having fun for a couple of months would be awesome. Find out that she's going back to her home country in a couple of months. I was like, okay, well, do you want to have fun for a couple of months while you're still here? And she's like, yeah, sure. And then we hit it off. And because we continued talking, it was like, okay, well, you know, we actually have a really good thing going on here. And I hate long distance relationships. I hate them to like the core. But she seemed really nice. I mean, cool. And she was like so a really good person at heart. So we figured, yeah, okay, you know, she plans to come back in October. I'll visit her one more time. And then, you know, she can come back and we'll see how it goes. So, and just basically snowball until today where we're still together. And she's actually been, immigration-wise, it didn't work out for her.
Yeah.
So we're trying to find ways to get her back in. And our relationship has not faltered, mm-hmm, at all from the beginning. And she is... If I hadn't met X before, yeah, she would be like...
So you are happy with that relationship?
I am very happy with the relationship. Although I have to admit that I love her. I'm not in love with her.
Yeah.
But I do love her. And...
What does that difference mean to you?
If she broke up with me right now,
yeah,
because she wanted her own space, I'll be okay. I might be maybe sad for a couple of weeks, but then I'll move on easy.
Okay.
I haven't moved on from...
Yeah.
Yeah.
From X.
Yeah.
From the non-relationship.
Yeah.
So what is the end goal here?
The end goal is I want to be able to go back to parkour class because I've been avoiding X for the last year and a half.
Yeah.
Just be friends, like not be awkward around her or have that, you know, shit, I missed out on this. Just to like be accepting of, see, I'm not ready yet, to go back to class and just... To be okay with that.
Yeah.
And also to not be awkward around her wife.
The goal here for Diana is clear. Help her give up the fantasy that X is the one, her ultimate soulmate, the perfect woman on the planet for her. I immediately set to work poking holes in her fantasy.
So you described her as your ideal partner.
Yeah.
What is it about her that makes her that?
Well, the most important thing is, you know, the essence of who she is as a human being. If you met her, you can pretty much tell from maybe the first half hour if you're talking to her. She has integrity. She's very open about herself. She's definitely kind.
Yeah.
She would make a very good partner.
Would you describe E the same way as integrity, kind?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So what's different?
X has, in her life, she is settled. She knows what she wants, and she went for it, and she's there right now. Yeah. E is still, well, I mean, she's still trying to get back in the country. So, I mean, she doesn't have, like, very defined goals. I feel like an ideal partner would be, okay, 5 years into the future, this is where I want to be, and I'm going to work towards that. I have goals, I have dreams, I have things to reach out for, and I'm sort of laying out a path to get there.
Yeah.
And E is just taking things as it comes. And I need some of that in my life, for sure. And she does provide that. But sometimes a little bit too relaxed for me.
Yeah.
I'm just like, okay, get your butt off the couch right now. No more TV. Let's just like get something going. But yeah, I mean, but other than that, I think I can see myself growing old with her. And being in my 30s obviously has put relationships into another perspective.
Your perception is that X basically kind of had her life together.
Yeah.
Whereas E is not really clear on her direction.
Right.
Do you feel like that prevents like a deeper commitment from you emotionally?
Yeah. Absolutely. But also not forgetting that I had that very intense connection with X that I could not let go of for the longest time. And I've never had that with anyone before. Not even past crushes. This is the first time I saw somebody who was more or less a stranger in front of my eyes, like be in connection and knowing that attraction was mutual in that moment, and she's not hiding that and I'm not hiding that. That was really powerful for me. And I haven't had that with E even. It was a warming up to it. So that was more than a huge bummer.
Do you think that huge connection, that chemistry is... would necessarily lead to a better relationship, though?
Not necessarily.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could have been over in a week, you know?
It could have been. I know I can't trust my gut always too much, but my gut was like, nah. It would have worked out. It would have worked out great.
We drill through Diana's beliefs about her relationships and hit the core. A steadfast faith that X was the one. A pure feeling that she has never experienced anywhere else before or since. This makes me curious. I ask her about her past relationships. I have a feeling that maybe this is not the first time she's gone through something like this.
Tell me about your previous relationship. Is this a completely new phenomenon in your life, this kind of fixation to a person?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Because it makes a big difference. If this is a pattern, that changes things.
Yes.
If this was a one-off thing that you couldn't let go of, then... that's a whole nother thing.
Right.
So what's the longest relationship you've had?
Like this one.
Okay. How many like significant relationships have you had, would you say?
2, 3 maybe. But they're not even that significant. Like the most significant one before this was a relationship with this other woman that I had that went on for like 2.5, maybe 3.5 months tops.
Okay. So this is actually your first, because this one's been going on, what, a year, year and a half?
Oh, no, it's been 2.5 now.
2.5 years. Okay.
Yeah.
And then this fixation on X has been going on for 2.5 years.
3.5.
Okay, so this is your first significant relationship, but not the first time you've been kind of fixated or idealized somebody. So tell me about a previous time that this happened.
Yes, I was 22. And there was this waitress in this restaurant that I used to work in Canada. And it was a summer night. I was hostessing outside, and I was like, okay, I'm going to like bust up this courage that I've been storing up for the last few months and going to see if she wants to hang out with me. And she turned me down. Long story short, she turned me down. And that was that. And I was hurt. So I left the restaurant. I went back to Vietnam, lived for a year before I came back. And because, you know, the city that we were at was pretty small, we bumped into each other. And obviously she wasn't at a different place by that time. And all that time, I was still thinking about her. And I couldn't stop thinking about her. So, okay, so we went out, and then one day she brings me up to her apartment. And she's like, okay, so remember like the time I told you that I was with somebody? And I was like, yeah, you did. And she said, well, let's call her ex-girlfriend, M.
Okay.
She said, M isn't my girlfriend. She's my mistress. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, we're not in one of those typical relationships. She is my mistress. I am a pet. And this is a relationship that we have.
Wow.
I was like, okay. And she's like, well, you need to be really open-minded right now. I am open-minded. Just, you know, And she's like, I have to say, like, you know, this relationship is one of the best ones yet because, you know, everything in life, she tells me what to do. Like, my life is so much better because she makes it easier and simpler, and it's for my best interests. And she was like, so, okay, yeah, I've been around with M for, you know, a couple of years now, and now she thinks that I'm ready to find a new pet. So she's a pet of somebody, her mistress, and her mistress felt like this woman that I was into was ready to be a mistress of her on her own.
Yeah.
So then she needed to find a pet, and she decided that the new pet could be me.
He's going
to
be you.
Yes, me.
For those of you who have no fucking clue what is going on right now, let me catch you up to speed. Many people have sexual fetishes, specific body parts or experiences or fantasies that sexually arouse them. Some fetishes are fairly common. A lot of men have foot fetishes, for example. They get turned on by feet. A lot of people have fetishes for certain clothes or hairstyles. They want to dress up like an 18th century poet and get fucked in their wig and stockings like a champ. Well, some fetishes fall into the more experiential realm. Some people like to be tied up. Some people are really into tying up. Some people like to be hit and slapped. Some people like to do the hitting and slapping. Some people like being controlled and told what to do. Some people like controlling and telling others what to do. Obviously, these people make efforts to find each other. Then they role play. They create play areas and safe words and consciously agree that for this period of time and in this place, I will be your master and you will be my slave, or whatever. The people who make these arrangements are loosely referred to as the BDSM community. BDSM stands for bondage, discipline, sadism, and masochism. Obviously, a huge part of BDSM is the role of consent. You can't just start choking somebody unless they specifically tell you that they get turned on by being choked. So the BDSM community usually, and I use that word purposefully, usually puts a ton of effort into open communication and consent between two people. So Diana, a smitten 22-year-old, has no idea what she just got herself into. Had you had any exposure to kink?
I have
BDSM?
No idea such a thing even existed.
Wow. So,
I basically went home, and the first thing I did was research what this alternative lifestyle that she was talking about was.
Yeah.
And then I found my closest answer was a 24-hour BDSM. And so, yeah, so I was like, definitely not for me. But I really like this girl.
Wow.
Like, really like her, and I was really considering to go for it.
And you had been fantasizing about her. Like, she had been another one of these kind of...
Yeah.
So you have prior experience of, like, this going horribly awry, like...
Yeah. Yeah. And I said, yeah, I really don't know what to think about it right now.
Yeah.
She said, if you ever say yes, like, you know, you can always walk out any time. There's no strings attached. You know,
yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that that's on the table. So I went back, took a week to think about it. I was going to say I was half in and half out because I didn't like the idea of being controlled.
Yeah. You don't strike me as
no.
that type of person.
Yeah, no. But on the other hand, I was so, like, entrenched in her, right?
Yeah.
I was, like, half debating, okay, maybe I can go in for, like, a couple months and see how it goes. Just, like, just to kind of be around her because I've never been around her. I really want to be around her. Like, you know, I mean, I can pull out of this, like, darkness that she's in and, like, be a hero and save her.
Her.
I can change her. So I was like, okay, maybe I'll say yes. And so the day that I was going to go in there at 11, yeah, I was having dinner with a couple of friends. Things didn't go right because our reservation sort of went all right. And
yeah.
We ended up having dinner at 10 instead. And I knew the basis of this new relationship, I was not allowed to be late, especially on, like, the day that I'm going to be in this weird, be her pet. Wow.
I mean, different strokes for different folks.
I can't believe I'm even hearing this right now. But
yeah.
And I, like, an hour before I was supposed to go in, and she lived, like, nearby, so I could just, like, literally walk over in, like, 10 minutes. I was like, I want to have this time with my friends. Like, I don't want to have to be subjected to, like, if it was, this is a normal relationship, I could have just called in and say, hey, babe, like, you know, I'm running late. Now
I'll
see you at 11:30.
Yeah.
But no, this is, like, I have to be there at 11 or I'm going to be disciplined. And so I decided to, you know, on the walk there, I still wanted to be on time. I told my friends I had an emergency. My friend had an emergency. I had to go. So I went my self-esteem was still really low. My self-worth was still really low. I didn't know how to tell, just interfacing, this is not right for me. That simple sentence was not possible at that time. I went up and she was, you know, all excited. And she's like, she fixed herself a red wine. She dressed up and it made me feel even worse about that.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, maybe just hot chocolate would be great.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, so, you know, so you said your questions, you know, over your text. I was like, yeah. So I laid out a couple of questions. I don't remember what they were, but I was trying to stall. So she tried to answer them as best as she could. And I think she overshared a little bit and decided to tell me that she fucked her dog. And I'm so happy you're hearing this, too. So I was just like,
whoa, what the actual fuck? I know I shouldn't have to say this, but people, please, please, please don't fuck your dog. Don't fuck any dog. Don't let anyone else fuck a dog. Just no. No. If you learn one thing from this audiobook, let it be this. Don't fuck dogs. It's hard because you're young, you're vulnerable, you've never been in a relationship. Like, this is a lot to spring on you.
So
how did it turn out?
It turned out terrible, awful. I had to like report to her every day, in morning and night.
Wow.
I had to check in and basically say, good morning, miss, checking in. I wasn't supposed to call her by name. I had to call her miss.
Yeah.
And she called me darling or dear, which I would puke in my mouth. Thankfully, it officially lasted 8 days, but I really only experienced 4 of those days. She wanted to take some vacation for herself and she was gone over the weekend. And so she's like, there's no reception, so you're free to do whatever you want. And I was like, okay. And when she left, it was like a huge like relief. It was just like, oh my gosh, I can't do this anymore. 4 days felt like a year, pretty much.
Yeah.
And so when she came back, I texted her and I was like, I'd like to see you. And she took it another way, and she's like, well, I'm a little tired, but sure, if you want to see me, come over.
Yeah.
So I went there, and she's like, so stand in the middle. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll go stand in the middle, whatever. So try to be an obedient pet to the end. And she's like, yeah, so do you have anything you want to say to me? I was like, yeah, I don't think this is for me anymore. And I just like breathed a sign of relief. And the next thing that came, she broke my heart right there and there. And the next thing she said was, great, the door's right there.
Wow.
And I was just like,
that was it.
I was thinking to myself, that was it. And she was like, well, go. The door's right there. Okay. Said bye to a dog who was just like, what the hell is going on? Because the dog was feeling stuff, obviously. And the dog was like, we were buddies now. Like, I think the dog liked me.
Yeah, well, you had a lot in common with the dog.
So, yeah. And I basically felt really, really sick after physically. I was just like,
yeah,
I couldn't go to work. I couldn't go to class. It was terrible. Anyways, so that was the most intense one. And
now, going even further back, like, did this type of thing happen when you were younger? Like, did you get obsessed, like, crushes?
Yeah, I had a crush that I couldn't, like, get my mind over. But nothing happened more than just friends and just watching
hockey. When was this?
That was when I first came out.
Mm-hmm.
So I was 2 months before I turned 19. That was when I found out, oh, I actually am not straight.
Yeah.
And I really like this girl.
Yeah.
Who was soccer mates with my roommate. She would come up and, you know, she played a guitar. She liked tarot cards. And, you know, she was into like rock music and was we had a lot of chemistry in that regard. And
yeah.
Also, it was also my first time off of Vietnam, off of an Asian, Asian culture. So everything was new. And it was just like, whoa, like, yeah, it turned out that she had a boyfriend at that time. So she wasn't even out yet.
And how long did that fixation go on for? Like, how long did you fantasize? And
3 years.
3 years?
Yeah. And so 3 years for the first one, 3 years for the BDSM woman, girl. And then this one, it's been more than 3 years now.
What ended the first one?
It just faded.
Yeah.
It just faded. It's similar to the second one that faded too.
So you've spent most of the last 12 or 13 years fixating and fantasizing about somebody.
Yeah, who's not available.
Okay, let's catch our breath for a second. There's a lot to take in here. Diana has this history of fixating on women and fantasizing about them obsessively. This fixation has caused her to make some questionable decisions in the past. But now she's older and more mature, and she seems to have recognized that these fantasies aren't entirely reasonable. and they're hurting her. At this point, I'm not sure what we're dealing with. Generally, anything that's compulsive to the point of interfering with one's life and well-being falls into a category you need to see a clinical psychologist to diagnose. My role in a situation like this is typically to point someone like Diana in the direction of someone who can handle the situation, or at least point her towards the information herself, where she can better understand what's going on in her mind and she can make that decision. But before I send her down that rabbit hole, I want to do one last check. So you have this history of fantasizing and idealizing women, and it's clear that this serves some sort of psychological role for you. Much in the same way, I'm going to make this comparison. I don't mean any offense, but it's the same way like an alcoholic's relationship with alcohol becomes to dampen some sort of pain. It sounds to me like this is a similar dynamic. Like you latch on to these fantasies that revolve around intimacy, love, acceptance, finding somebody who like truly makes you happy. And there's some part of your brain that like needs that. It's like, it's like terrified to let that go.
Right.
And so I think the next question to kind of investigate is what role is this serving you? And obviously it's, you consciously don't know that, otherwise you would have stopped. But like, what is the benefit here? Like, what's the feeling? Take me through day to day. Like, how often do you fantasize about X? Like, how often do you think about her?
In the beginning, she would be on my mind, or even just at the back, kind of lingering pretty much every day.
Yeah.
Like every minute, every hour. The type of thing, like she was constantly burning in the back of my mind. And as time passed, I mean, when I was with E, when I found E and I was with E, she was always still in the back of my mind. Still X was still in the back of my mind as well all the time, but lesser.
Yeah.
And so when E left back to Greece, and at first I was like, okay, this is great. I'm just going to go back to parkour and see what happens. And then a part of me just couldn't do it because I felt like I was going to be cheating on her and I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
So then I didn't go back, and it has been a year and a half now, and I really miss parkour.
Is the intensity of this one greater than the previous ones?
Way greater.
Really?
Way greater. And I think that's part of, initially I attributed it to, okay, this is the same thing as what happened to, the first one. This is the same thing as what happened to the BDSM lady. And then this is just another one of those things.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm just going to write it out for, it's going to hit the 3-year mark and it's going to pass.
Go away.
And,
but it's stronger and it's
much
more
stronger. I think it was because of the initial connection in the beginning that for some reason I just could not shake that off.
The thing, speaking of not shaking it off, like the thing that keeps standing out to my mind too is the coincidence of your father basically almost dying. So like you're meeting her basically coincided with a traumatic episode in your own life. And like the more we talk about this, the less that seems like a coincidence to me. Because if your mind is already kind of doing this as a coping mechanism, and then you meet the next one, the next fantasy girl, and then immediately after that your dad almost dies and he's paralyzed now, right?
Right.
Yeah, so it's like awful experience. It makes sense that your mind, especially coming back from Vietnam, you just like just watched your dad in the hospital and like your family's a mess and everything is kind of falling apart. It might even also be why that emotional episode was so intense, because you were coming back from Vietnam in such an emotionally vulnerable place.
Right.
And then you come back and you see her and it's just like, boom, salvation, it's like,
yeah, I mean, that's possible. That's definitely.
I mean, I don't know how useful that is to know. Sometimes digging up the reasons for why we feel is helpful.
Right.
Other times it's not. It's like, oh, okay, I'm like this because my dad never talked to me. Okay, great. But it doesn't change anything. But it's funny because then other people, sometimes it's like sorting through that is helpful. The impressions I'm getting from this initial conversation is A, this is some sort of coping mechanism that you developed.
Right.
The fantasizing. Yeah. Because, I mean, look, like, we all do this to a certain extent, especially when we're younger. But it for you, for whatever reason, your brain is just, like, taking that baton and just, like, ran.
Right.
just, like, running laughs with it. Which is fine. Like, everybody's got their thing. And especially when you think about how some other people cope or, like, right. other people's compulsions that they have. Like, right. this is definitely not the worst one you could have.
I didn't even see it as an addiction problem before until today.
Yeah.
Until you pointed it out. Which
yeah.
That definitely makes sense to me.
I had a friend years ago who had an obsessively irrational level of jealousy with women he dated. But it was funny. It wasn't the type of like, what the hell? You said you'd be here at 9. It's 9:10. Like, are you screwing? You know, it wasn't like that. He had this bizarre jealousy about their past. So other guys they dated, if she took a trip with her ex-boyfriend to Hawaii or something, it would like eat at him for months. Like, and he couldn't let it go. And it kept ruining his relationships. And he ended up going to a bunch of like psychiatrists and a bunch of therapy and reading, studying, and he discovered that it's actually, there's a name for it, it's called retroactive jealousy, and there's actually, it's basically kind of the same switch in the brain that activates like OCD and things like that. Like, it's basically the same thing that creates OCD, it's just in him, it took a right turn and landed on his intimate relationships. He probably had experiences that shaped that in whatever way. But he started approaching it as an OCD problem, and things immediately got better. And I think since it sounds like this has been like a chronic thing for you, like it's basically your whole adult life, you've been dealing with this in one form or another. So it sounds like it's a similar thing with you. Like, it's the same way we eventually like learn our own strengths and weaknesses, learn what we're susceptible to, what we're vulnerable to. Bad habits we have, good habits we have, like this is your Achilles heel, like this is your thing. And I would love for me to just say like that brilliant thing and then it's like the clouds part and it's like, oh, Diana's fixed, you know, but it's like, it's not going to happen. I mean, it will get better. You know, the goal here is management and understanding this part of yourself and understanding like, oh yeah, that's the part of my brain that likes to do that. You know, that's my fantasy part. One thing I always love to say is that the best thing about somebody is often also the worst. And it's, you know, you do all this work with like screenwriting and acting, and it sounds like you have a very vivid and rich fantasy life. And it's like, it might actually be that same part of your brain that brings all of that to life for you that also does this to you. In terms of going forward, so you said you're not as obsessive about her right now, and you've got all this stuff going on with E right now as well with the visas and stuff. So that's kind of occupying your time. I'm trying to think of some sort of like homework.
Yes, please.
I need
to work on something with. I really like the this observation of the OCD switch.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that I probably have that too.
Yeah.
And that what you just said about like the acting and screenwriting and fantasy life, that really makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And I was actually tearing up a little bit because I think it's because it's true. And I'm going to go investigate that more when I get home.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure.
Do you find, this is totally just a hunch, but are you like a perfectionist in other areas of your life?
I'm working so hard on that. Yeah. The answer is yes, but less so now.
Yeah.
Yes, I tend to be.
I kind of figured, because people who struggle with perfectionism, it's because they always have this idea in their head of like, this is how it fucking should be, you
right.
know? And it's like, till reality meets that point, which it never does, perfectionist is just like going crazy. And it, in a strange way, like this is what you're doing to yourself with these partners. It was really interesting to hear you talk about E, because the way you started talking about her at first, my assumption was you were going to be like, yeah, I'm in the wrong relationship. I don't want to be with this person. But by the time you got to the end, I'm like, no, that sounds like a very loving, like it's
it
like,
is.
There's, and I'm sure you logically understand this and intellectually understand this. It's different, like emotionally processing it. But like, if you were with X, there'd be shit with her that you'd be like,
yeah,
God, if only she would get this together, like I would totally have no qualms with committing to her, you know? And I think that's true with whoever you end up with. So anyway, I used to have like a very vivid fantasy life around music, art, and stuff like that. And looking back, I was using it to escape discomfort in the present. Because I think there's good fantasy. The fantasy you opt into of like, okay, cool, I got like 3 hours free. I'm going to watch a movie, or I'm going to like read a book, or I think I'm going to daydream for the next 10 minutes, you know? And then there's like that compulsive fantasy of like, I used to like feel anxious if I didn't have music on and I wasn't envisioning myself like learning songs and things like that. But yeah, maybe just pay attention to the fantasies when they pop up now. Like, don't suppress them, but kind of like observe like what you're fantasizing and ask yourself like, why am I fantasizing that? Let's say you're fantasizing about like you and her like walking in a park or something. Be like, what is it about that? Like, what is the emotion that I'm gaining from this right now? You know?
Happiness.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's usually.
But like, get more specific than that. It's gotcha. Like, what is this fantasy providing right now that is not in my life at this moment?
Gotcha.
Because what you might find is that the same couple little things might start showing up over and over again. Like, you might find it's like, wow, 80% of my fantasies with her involve this one thing.
Gotcha.
I give Diana the homework of analyzing her fantasies to see if she can find any patterns within them. I'm hoping that will give her a better understanding of how to manage them. Meanwhile, another rampant fantasizer checks in. I get on the phone with Mike, and as always, there's never a dull moment.
So how have you been? How's the last month gone?
At first, it definitely was a little bit of a relief to stop dating, delete all my dating apps, and just relax and focus on myself. So yeah, that's been really good. As far as like contact from Katrina, there wouldn't have been any, except for the fact that I heard through a friend that she was moving.
Mm-hmm.
There's this little piece still tying us together that I wanted to try and resolve before she left. I had made the grand gesture to Jennifer of proposing, right? And so when I came back to Katrina, I was like, she really didn't want me back. And she's like, I'll never want to be with you. And so I had bought a house like 6 months earlier or something. And this, I mean, I recognize this is super stupid as I say this.
Yeah.
I know in hindsight, this is super stupid, but I thought that I could prove my worthiness to her or something by making a grand gesture of putting her name on the title of my house.
Oh my God. Okay.
I know, Mark, fuck me.
Oh, dude.
Anyway, so yeah, regretting that, she didn't have to sign anything.
Yeah,
for me to put her on, but to take her off, she has to sign a piece of paper in front of a notary. All throughout a relationship, when we were kind of on and off or whatever, she's like, "No, don't worry. If you know, when things don't work out, I won't make it hard." And so I'm like, "Oh crap, you're leaving, you're moving." So I tried to use my friends who told me that she was leaving to like resolve this. I'm like, "Hey, can you have her sign this? Can you?" I think she's kind of hurting right now herself, and so she made it pretty difficult and kind of refused. I think she maybe wanted to like keep this tie to me somehow.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, I really was trying to just work through my friends, but then finally I texted her and asked her to do it when she pretty much refused to my friends. Engaged her a little bit via text. At the end of the day, I didn't want to apply too much pressure because I'm not in a place where it's really affecting me, but it's going to affect me someday if I ever need to sell the house, you know?
Yeah.
So That was difficult. Like I was kind of tripping. I almost wrote you an email about it, but I just.
So did she do it, or she still hasn't?
She still is not. I ended up dropping off at her house the piece of paper and like $20 in case there's a fee for the notary and some instructions on how she could do it before she left town. But she didn't do it. Just trying to make it easy for her, you know. But
right.
Dropped it off on her door. I didn't want to engage her, knock on the door and go in and all that jazz, but I knew that'd be pretty dramatic. I mean, she said via text, she's like, "Don't come over here. Don't, you know," and I think my friends are like, it's probably what she wanted. She wanted that to happen. And so I didn't want the drama. I just dropped it off. And I mean, eventually maybe I'll have to go through her parents or, I mean, I can engage her eventually, but I think she needs to get to a better place.
Yeah. Either way, you're kind of at her mercy.
Yeah.
Give her some time. Try again in a couple months. I mean, ideally, she finds something out there that gets her excited and she'll like reach a place where she wants to be rid of any attachment to you. But clearly there's like still a lot of raw emotion tied up with it and tied up with you. So
definitely. And as I was processing that, I mean, there were a few moments where I was like, I was getting emotional about it because I'm like, oh, if she doesn't do it, you know, I'm going to be tied to her for a long time. And Mark's going to never let me date again until I get this resolved. I'm being dramatic, but I really wanted to get it resolved so I could have that peace of just like finally moving on, you know. But like you say, I'm at her mercy and I need to be at peace with that, with my fucked up decision I made to put her on there in the first place. So
yeah, you do. I would just give her some time. You do it in a way that's kind of respectful and impersonal. Eventually she'll just do it. The worst thing you can do is get like emotionally sucked into it and create more drama out of it. You guys have a long history of doing stuff like that with each other, so that's the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm happy that Mike avoided a potential power struggle, but it's clear that he's got his own fantasy woes going on. He proposes to a woman he's not even sure he wants to be with. He puts his house in the name of his girlfriend that he's broken up with 8 different times. There's a certain detachment from reality going on here. The problem is, these romantic gestures are part of his constant power struggle with these women. And these fantasies escalate with the power struggles to the point where it's seriously complicating their lives. I decide that my goal with Mike is simply to get him to cut this shit out. He's a good guy. He's smart, successful. If he can just rein in his emotions and ground himself in reality a bit more, his relationship problems will likely take care of themselves.
So how does not dating feel?
Not dating has felt great, actually.
Really? That's great.
Yeah. I think you were definitely right that I needed time, focus on myself and focus on just not constantly chasing after something. Yeah. I mean, to the extent that even a friend of mine as well has jumped on board and he's like, well, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to go on a dating app diet too.
That's awesome.
I mean, I still have like kind of lonely moments sometimes and, but I think it's been good for me to do that. I don't know why exactly, but at very least, at least on dating apps, you're like always talking to like 7 people and keeping up with it is just energy consuming, right?
Yeah.
And maybe you're not lonely or alone on a weekend night, but you get home afterwards and you're like, well, that was a waste of my time.
Yeah.
Now instead, I mean, I've been focusing on trying to build some more friendships, spending time with people that I really care about.
Good. Good. Yeah, at the very least, you're freeing up a lot of energy and time.
Yes.
To do other things. You know, the loneliness thing, that's to be expected. And I think a big part of being able to have a healthy relationship is by learning to be happy alone. Because if you learn how to be happy alone, then there's never this like terror once you're in a relationship again. You know, a lot of people, they're terrified to be alone, and so they'll hold on to a bad relationship just because they wouldn't know what to do with themselves. So if you can kind of conquer the loneliness, it puts you in a much more empowered position in future relationships, because there's just there's no reason to like tolerate anything.
Yeah, it's really interesting you say that, because I think in the past, when I've exited a relationship, my calibration was that I'm going to go back to dating apps and dating and this constant cycle, right? So that was my bar. But being like alone for a while has allowed me to recalibrate. Even if I know there's some lonely moments, I know it's a good thing. I know I'll have more time for myself and I can be more productive. And so it's just that recalibration that I've gone through it's been really good, I think.
And what will be interesting, I hope this will happen. I mean, we'll see. But oftentimes what happens with people kind of in your situation is they're like, okay, yeah, cool, dating diet, get my own life in order and working on myself and focusing on friends and family. And they kind of stop thinking about dating, and then all of a sudden they're at an event or something, or their friend brings somebody, they actually end up just serendipitously meeting somebody who's like way more compatible for them. And a lot of it's because they're basically just focusing on the things that really matter to them in their life. And so if you're focusing on what matters to you in your life, then the other potential partners that you come into contact with are already like pre-qualified for the simple reason that you're not doing anything that you don't like doing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Totally.
Going forward, that's what I need to do, right? Like just focus on what's most important to me and then hope that something comes along, or don't hope, right? Just just don't give a fuck and something will come along.
How are you feeling with, how was not talking to Katrina?
It's been good. Listening to some of your earlier stuff where you talked about compatibility versus chemistry.
Yeah.
Mike is referring to an old article I wrote in 2013 called Compatibility and Chemistry. In it, I define chemistry as an emotional magnetism you feel with someone. It is intangible and unspoken. Chemistry is either there or it's not. Compatibility, on the other hand, is more tangible. Compatibility is having similar lifestyles, values, desires, and goals. A lot of people are compatible, but have little chemistry. These people end up in kind of dull relationships that look great on paper, but don't feel like they're going anywhere. People who have chemistry, but no compatibility, enter into a roller coaster ride, constantly generating drama to make themselves feel close to each other and needed, because they share little outside of that drama to keep them aligned. The secret sauce, obviously, is to find someone with whom you have both compatibility and chemistry. But that's easier said than done.
I do think that Katrina and I had this intense chemistry, but several compatibility factors that we both chose to overlook. And to a certain extent, some compatibility factors you got to be willing to work through. And
yeah,
but there were some obviously blaring, really difficult ones that just weren't worth it.
And it's a super common trap that people find the chemistry that makes them feel sunshine and rainbows everywhere. You know, they get these romantic ideas in their head of like, we'll conquer everything. We're meant to be together. And it's like, yeah, as soon as you start telling yourself that, it's like, it's not going to end well.
Yeah, those are like the big red flags, I think. And a lot of my more serious relationships have had a lot of those. I told you once before that I was married. Both my ex-wife and Katrina, there was talk from both of them about like, no, we're soulmates.
Yeah.
There's this like guiding force drawing us together that we're meant to be together. And I wasn't the one usually like saying that.
Yeah.
But I maybe feed into it a little bit and at least entertain the thought, you know?
Well, it's a seductive idea because it removes responsibility, because it's like, oh, well, if we're soulmates, then it doesn't matter what we do. We have to be together. And then on the other hand, it kind of adds this almost like religious component of there's some greater force in the universe that is deciding this.
Yeah.
That's also very seductive, but it's problematic. Like, I think the whole soulmate thing, it feels very good, but it causes a lot of problems because it comes back to that, you know, toleration of a bad relationship. It causes you to tolerate things that no person should actually tolerate because, you know, it's like, okay, well, she's treating me like shit, but we're soulmates, so it's going to turn out all right. And yeah, I did the same thing. Like my first serious relationship, we had a very similar pattern to you and Katrina in that she was the person in the relationship that would set all the fires, and I was the one who was like constantly putting them out, you know, so we'd have these huge blow ups and like tons of drama, and we'd hate each other for a week and all this awful stuff would happen. And then we'd come back together and it'd be like very emotional and very intense. And then we would use that would be part of the justification. It's like, oh, well, if we got through that, then we must really be meant to be together. It's like, wow, nothing can keep us apart. It's like we handle all adversity. And then it's, of course, we go and create more drama for ourselves. And it's just this like really insidious spiral that you get stuck in, this like cycle, just trashing each other's emotions and feeling awful and then coming together and feeling amazing and then using that as a justification for why you made each other feel awful. It's like, it makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember my ex-wife saying the same thing, like we'd have a big blow up or whatever. And then just like you, we'd come together and reconcile and the emotions were so intense. And she would say that exact same thing, like later in life, things are going to be hard when we have kids. But since we got through that, since we've already gotten through some hard stuff, like we're definitely meant to be together. We're going to be so strong now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, no, we're not strong. We're in this, this cycle of bullshit that we can't get out of and we're addicted to it. It's just fucking stupid.
Yeah. Isn't it kind of horrifying to imagine having kids with that, like
that was my motivation to file for a divorce. I think I imagined it. I saw the horror.
Yeah.
Mike makes an important point here. Fantasies have an addictive quality to them. They are a form of escape from a painful reality. And the more you indulge them, the more you need to indulge them to get the same high as before. Mike is similar to Diana in that he seems addicted to fantasizing about the women in his life. But whereas Diana's compulsive fantasizing is confined to her mind, Mike seems hooked on acting them out, doing extravagant shit, getting himself into trouble again and again. My hope is that by putting him on a dating detox, it will help him develop the self-awareness to prevent himself from going off the deep end in his future relationships.
What are the things you're working on with yourself?
I mean, I'm always pretty dedicated to work. And honestly, Mark, that's something that I'm trying to figure out still, right? Like, if I'm not dedicating all this energy to dating right now, I've been remodeling my house. And I you know, it's kind of been this skill that I didn't have in the past. And I've acquired it through a lot of YouTube videos, some friends. And so I'm almost done with that. But while that's fulfilling and fun, you're kind of a hermit, right? You're just at home doing that. And it's fulfilling, but then the fulfillment, I think, wears off, right? There's no real growth there. It's like this bathroom looked like shit and now it looks really nice and that's it. And so I'm trying to wrap all that up so I can quit spending my evenings or weekends working on these remodel projects. But I'm trying to figure out like what's the next step? How can I engage a wider, maybe widen out my friend group or those who I interact with so that maybe serendipitously someday I can find that person who we just met because we have similar interests, right? I mean, I have a ton of interests, but sometimes I don't always like pursue them, right? Like, I go to Pilates and there's a bunch of like really attractive, I'm pretty sure they're all like moms and married there, but...
Now be honest. Did you do Pilates because you're really into it or because just there's a bunch of women there?
I started because I was remodeling my house and I was starting to have some back pain. And so somebody recommended Pilates. It's cured me of my back pain, but I think I keep going because there's a bunch of hot moms there. So I'm being totally honest.
I love it.
But I don't know. Outside of that, I mean, I'm trying to, you know, wrap up these home improvement project so that I can maybe host more people at my house and bring more people into my circle that way.
But you feel like you'd like to be doing something more, but you can't really put your finger on what.
Yeah. I mean, I love consuming your material, Mark, and other books. I hope that I'm not one of those, I can't remember how you put it, but like just like the self-help genres. Like that I'm addicted to it, you know.
Oh, self-help junkie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope I'm not one of those, but I mean I love consuming that type of stuff.
We're getting to the point in our story where we can see a lot of common threads emerging. Everyone so far has had a painful and or traumatic past relationship experience. Everyone struggles to set boundaries and stand up for themselves. Everyone struggles with compulsive behaviors, overworking, drugs and alcohol, fantasizing, and now self-improvement. What's interesting about these compulsions is that they all share one thing in common, a preoccupation with oneself. Here, since Mike is finally alone and has a bit of free time, I suggest something radical. I suggest he start doing things for others.
So, Well, I don't know.
I was going to ask you, because a lot of the stuff that you're describing, it's self-improvement, which is great. It's important to have that. But is there any area of your life that you feel like you're giving back?
That's a good question. Let me think for just a second. Remodeling my house is pretty selfish. Pilates is selfish. I'm done with my MBA in 2 weeks.
Congrats.
Really giving back there.
Congrats.
The only part of my life is my job. I think that I am able to help others at work a lot, but sometimes that's hit and miss. Sometimes I'm like really consumed by a particular project and I'm producing something and I'm not able to like be as influential towards others. So the answer is no, I'm not really giving.
Yeah.
I'm not doing a lot of that.
So that might be something to look into. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be like a charity or anything. It could be, but it's more like finding an outward facing project. So, you know, it's the difference between remodeling your own home and like your grandmother's home or or just volunteering time, expertise. You mentioned the self-help junkie thing. I think one of the reasons that kind of becomes an issue is, you know, self-improvement's a fantastic thing, but it's improving yourself endlessly is kind of, it becomes kind of pointless or even like masturbatory if you're not sharing that somehow. And in terms of just being like a well-rounded individual, and this comes back to the relationship thing too, is one of the problems that you've had in a lot of your previous relationships is that it's, you know, a toxic relationships, they revolve a lot around your own feelings. Like, oh, she did this and it made me feel this way. Wow, she's such a bitch. I'm going to show her by doing this. And it's this like tit for tat thing that never ends. I think getting out there and just like finding a way to contribute and help people in a way that's like a little unconditional might be like a good little exercise. It'll definitely make you feel good. It'll solve the loneliness thing. And it might give you like a nice impression of like, oh, this is what like a healthy giving looks like. This is what like a healthy form of love looks like.
Sure.
You're in a good spot. And I think this is a good trajectory for you. It sounds like it's already doing a lot.
Yeah.
So I think just keep with it. And obviously I would try Katrina again, maybe next month, give her some space and then just keep in the back of your head the outward-looking improvement.
Yeah, I'm going to brainstorm some ideas. As far as, I think I should stay off dating apps, Mark.
And yes.
I think that's a good thing for me.
Yeah. Let's keep that going.
Okay.
A few weeks after our first meeting, Diana sent me an excited email telling me that there actually was documented evidence of compulsive fantasizing. That it was, apparently, actually a thing. Never one to miss a chance to hear how right I am, I agreed to meet up with her in the studio to talk about it.
You made a cool discovery.
I did.
Since we last talked, you actually found that the fantasy addiction is like a thing.
It is an actual, I'm not sure if it's classified scientifically, but there has been research done to validate that that's an actual addiction with people. That mine is pretty high on the spectrum, but it's not. There are people who like dream of fantasy, like warlords and like witches and covens, and they actually dream that out the entire day and weeks even.
Wow.
So, and that's an addiction.
Okay, time out for a second. Addiction is a controversial word in psychology. There is a lot of debate about what constitutes addiction and whether various addictions even exist or not. In my own research, maladaptive daydreaming does have empirical data, and it is being studied at the moment. But it's also so new that no official declaration has come down on whether it's actually a diagnosable condition or not. I'm not a licensed professional, but in my personal opinion, whether it's an actual addiction or not doesn't fucking matter. If Diana experiences her fantasizing as an addiction and thinking of it in those terms helps her better manage it, then great. We'll talk about it as an addiction.
Yeah, and it's been interesting to take a few steps back and be like, yes, I've had that since I was a kid, and how that's affecting my emotional fantasies with women whom I can't have.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I didn't have the mechanisms to try to adjust to say real life situation. So I was like, okay, well, you know, I need to be stable, and the only way for me to get stable was to go into the daydreaming. And I knew I was wasting my time because I had all these dreams and goals and projects that I was going to be working on. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I felt like if I was pushing that aside, I could end up emotionally unstable, and I didn't want that to happen.
It's like a chair leg for you, almost.
Yeah.
So would you say what's worse, not doing the daydreaming or quote unquote wasting time getting lost in the daydreams?
The thing was, I never actually tried to do without the daydreaming. I never actually worked on, I mean, I think I did try and it did feel good for like temporarily, but because the addiction has been such a strong component for so long, I think on the whole, it would be better to have lost that. But I felt like that was a part of myself that I kind of wanted to hold on to and I didn't want to let go.
Yeah.
That made me feel good about something, but it just made me feel good because otherwise in life I would just be working, you know, on projects which I don't see results for.
Mm.
And then, you know, I don't feel good in any way, and then I would maybe become emotionally unstable. But these were all like subconscious thoughts which I never really rose to the surface until I'm talking about that now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so eventually I think being with my current girlfriend actually saved me.
Have you found that like gaining more understanding around what it is has made it less stressful or less painful?
Definitely. Definitely. I felt like an immediate, like, twofold increase of ease and mm-hmm. calm, and just like, oh, I understand what it is now. It's
yeah.
not like, and it wasn't just daydreaming. Like, it would go into dreams. Like, I would sleep at night and
oh,
I would
wow.
dream of her.
This has been going on for mm-hmm. forever with somebody. And it'll probably continue to be that way. Your brain will just like latch on to people or ideas or fantasies. And it sounds like that the work here is finding those skills within yourself, those mental skills to recognize your habits and knowing how to like slow it down or stop it. Or there's probably going to be some situations where you're like, all right, I'm just going to let my brain run wild for a little mm-hmm. while. And that's kind of what it needs. But there might be other situations where you're like, yeah, I need to get a hold of this and shut it down. So it's kind of opening up this whole new mental landscape for you to like figure yourself out. Your mind is just always running, and some of it is important and some of it's totally unimportant, and some of it is in your control and some of it's totally out of your control. And I think the big realization for a lot of people is just learning like, oh, you get to choose which thought is important and which one's not. You get to choose like if this is going to be a big deal to you, because most people are just on autopilot. For your situation, I think that gaining that kind of understanding is paramount. I mean, it sounds like you're already there. How are things going with the girlfriend?
It's going better.
Yeah?
Just because I've put a lot more effort into, not that I was aloof, but it was just like, yeah, I know, cool, whatever. But now it's just like, I mean, she's mushy over text.
Yeah.
And I'm not a mushy person over text.
Yeah.
And apparently she isn't as well until she's like, oh, until I met you. I'm like, okay. and lately I've been okay. I'm going to give into the mush a little bit more. And that giving in and solidifying the mush, you know, with her, it has taken me further away from the fantasy land and, you know, the feelings.
Interesting.
Associated with, I mean, it's inevitable. It was just, I think a part of me just didn't want to let that go too.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because it's maybe those fantasies were occupying that part of yourself, and so that you just weren't available.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. I wanted to keep a part of, like, my heart, like, a part of myself sort of available and open. But I don't know why, because, I mean, I think I mentioned this the last time we talked, was, you know, I saw that she was, seemed like she was a perfect candidate, right?
Yeah.
Like, at least on the surface, and I knew deep down, I think that the reason why I fantasized with her was because she was like an ideal situation of what my life would be and to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
When I met her, I was still sort of winding down my real estate career, winding down the prospect of a real estate career. But I went back to waitressing because I wanted to focus on acting and all that. And the fact that she was, you know, in stunts and she was, you know, already starting to build quite a successful film career. Her stunt career has already taken off by now, but like back then she was, you know, she was getting into the ropes.
Yeah.
And it would be so advantageous, you know, if we were like together and I get to go to parkour classes for free. And like my partner is a freaking parkour instructor, parkour badass. It's really cool to like see her like advanced. And every time she, like something better happened to her, the lesser I felt essentially about myself.
Okay, the less you felt about yourself.
And then one day I fantasized to myself, okay, what if I the movie that I wrote got picked up, and you know, and then all these great things happened to me, would I still like be hooked onto her? And I was like, probably not.
So maybe it's like a vicarious thing. It's like it's inversely proportional to how good you feel about yourself and your own identity. It's
right.
Like it's like the more flux and uncertainty you feel with yourself,
yeah,
the more you cling onto these fantasies,
yeah,
to sustain yourself.
Yeah.
It's interesting because last time we talked about how, you know, these fantasies have been going on for a long time. But I'm starting to wonder if, like, because you've had a lot of major life shakeups. You're an immigrant. You're twice an immigrant. You've gone through a bunch of different careers. You are lesbian. So you've had a lot of these big identity shakeups throughout your life. And so, yeah, maybe the more you start, like, solidifying, this is who I am, this is what I'm doing, I'm good at what I'm doing, I'm experiencing success, that stability you talked about of like what you're looking for in a long-term relationship, you know, maybe that developing that like strong, solid identity can like start replacing that leg of the chair a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe this is just a coping mechanism for, like you said, you're type A. So you're like, you need order and structure in your brain, and maybe these fantasies give it when you often don't have it otherwise.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that parallel.
Yeah.
It rings true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this might be one of those things that it's like, you know, 5 years from now, you're married and kicking ass and it's like, oh yeah, I used to have that fantasy thing.
Yeah.
Who knows? So I think that's more the place that you'll probably want to get to.
So that's it, coaching over.
Yeah. So good luck.
Thank you.
Nice knowing you.
Likewise.
This has been a whirlwind few weeks for Diana. It feels like we've really dug into the significance of her fantasizing. It gives her a sense of order. It provides her with emotional security. It gives her certainty. And ultimately, I think that's what we all lean on fantasy to help us do, to protect ourselves. Mike's fantasies protect him by justifying his power struggles. He convinces himself that if only he made a grand gesture towards the woman he cared about, everything would be all right. Jerry also has his fantasies, of course. His fantasies tell him that falling in love means losing half his shit. But this is just as detached from reality as Diana's belief that a few moments of eye contact equal a lifetime of compatibility. But like Diana, Jerry's fantasies protect him as well. It's only by relinquishing our fantasies, by embracing reality, by making ourselves vulnerable to getting hurt, that we're able to achieve real, healthy intimacy, that we're able to drop our power struggles and respect each other as individuals. But that vulnerability is difficult, especially if you've got a fucked up past like most of us do. Which brings us back to Mimi. What are her fantasies? What story has she told herself to justify allowing a man to linger in the background of her life for years on end? What is she protecting?